The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yeah!
And I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects. That's at agent_70 on Twitter.
Sup, everybody?
We also have at PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Hey, how's it going? I warned you, Tim. I warned you. You brought it up on Twitter, so I'm doing it. I'm wearing the mask this week.
Yes, for all the folks who are.
I'll start wearing different ones every week, I guess, maybe. We'll run through the whole collection.
Yes, for those watching on the video podcast feed, you can see Dirt dressed up as a luchador for the week. What's your luchador name?
Oh, I just go by Dirt. It's okay. It's funny because I started the gimmick of wearing these doing internet videos in 2008, and by 2012, I was tired of doing it, so I stopped wearing them. And then when I started doing the Vine comic reviews, I just decided to start wearing them again for no real reason. And because I've got a bunch of them, so I figured why not? And it's 6-second videos, so who cares?
Right.
But, a lot of people like them, so I'm just going to wear them for a while, see what happens.
I love that you have now continuity between your Vine reviews and the Comic Book Chronicles.
We got to keep it all in the family.
Exactly.
And we also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter with us.
Yeah!
Well, his lower thirds is not working, so there you go.
What's that?
My lower thirds aren't working, so.
Oh!
Going old school.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have a very special guest here with us this week. He's been a guest on the podcast in the past. He watches lots of our live shows. Supporting us, we appreciate it. We have at MattWang97 on Twitter.
Hey guys, how you doing?
We're good. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Yes, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited that you guys invited me on the show this week.
And it's a very special reason we invited Matt on, because he recently was at a comic book convention over, was it the weekend?
Yeah, it was, it started on Friday.
The MEFCC conference? Did I do it right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, the Middle Eastern Film Comic and Comic Con in Dubai.
So you just happened to be in Dubai for the weekend? And you're just
oh,
like,
just
as long
passing
as I'm here,
just,
you know.
In the neighborhood.
I was riding a camel to Egypt.
You were filming Fast and Furious 8, you know. driving
my
cars
wife
through
and
buildings.
My wife and I were actually in Dubai for vacation. It's been on our bucket list for a long time. So we went there last Saturday, and we were in the Dubai Mall on Monday, and then I saw a sign, and it said Middle East Film and Comic Con. And, you know, I just missed the cosplay show, supposedly, and then they had a display of, you know, professional and amateur art at the mall. And then I looked at the dates, and I said, wait a second, this is happening actually very soon. Maybe, you know, I can try to swing by. You know, I talked to my wife, and she was very accommodating. She knows I love going to the shows. And I was tweeting with you guys. And I was able to buy tickets and go kind of as an early bird VIP on Friday. And I got to spend a couple hours there on Friday. The convention was actually happening at the Dubai World Trade Center, which was right across the street from my hotel. So it actually worked out really, really well.
Nice.
That's a hell of a bucket list. I like that.
Yeah. That's a big checkoff right there.
Yeah, really.
But how do you guys want me to start? You know, I sent you guys our whole portfolio of pictures, and mm-hmm. What do you want me to start off with at the show?
Well, how about overall? Yeah, I was about to say it's your this part of the show is yours to run. You know, more often than not, we probably talk about like our overall impressions and then some of your highlights at the show.
My overall impressions were great, very positive. It's a pretty young show. I think this is the second year. I could be wrong. It might be the third. It was a very varied show. So it wasn't just about comic books. They had a couple of movie stars there and TV stars. They had the actor that plays Jaime Lannister from Game of Thrones. They have brought him in. Summer Glau was a guest. Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future. They had a variety of comic book artists. A young woman from Italy was there that I knew that I met at New York Comic Con. She does a lot of the covers for Zenoscope. I walked by her booth. I was like, wait, didn't we have dinner in New York together? And she's like, oh my God, what are you doing in Dubai? So we got to chat. They flew out a couple of artists from New York. The artist for Skullkickers was flown in. And I think what I really liked about the show was it reminded me of kind of earlier Comic Cons and earlier shows, because they didn't just focus on comics. They had film and TV. They had WWE guys were there.
Randy Orton is on the list of guests.
Yeah, that huge WWE area. They had a lot of huge esports area as well. And I think they had a lot of virtual reality booths. Samsung had a booth there. Sony had a booth where you can try their VR devices. And they had a Magic the Gathering area, so I got to talk to those guys because I've done a lot in that community and I know a lot of the players. I noted there are a lot of retailers. So Virgin Megastore was a featured retailer there, and they had a lot of guys selling, figures. One thing I noticed, they're selling a lot of old consoles. There seems to be, in this part of the world, a lot of people still have very old consoles, like the old NESs,
wow,
Sega Genesis, and they had a bunch of retailers selling games and support products for that. It was a very mixed crowd, a lot of males and females, a good mix. Young and old, a lot of families, a lot of manga and anime fans, and just a lot of excitement about the show. People were there, milling at all the booths. It wasn't a big show. It was probably about, I'm trying to think, if I think about New York Comic Con, it was probably Agent 70. If you remember the first New York Comic Con around 06, 07, sure. It was just the bottom hall. It reminded me of that, but less gotcha. Dense.
Yeah, I was going to say, because the New York Comic Con, in its first year, in its first iteration, was closed down because it was overcrowded. They had oversold the tickets. But in terms of the space, based on the pictures that you provided to us, I definitely see the comparison. I also, it's a shame, I guess we'll try at some point to put up some of these pictures, but one of the pictures that you provided to us, that you took, was of the VR area, the Samsung VR area, and that seemed very popular.
Yeah. And I think one of the things when you walked into the main entrance that you saw was, I don't know if you guys know this, but they're building a lot of amusement parks in Dubai. And one of them is the IMS World of Adventure, I think that's what it's called. And that's there's going to be a whole Marvel theme section. And that's what they've been showing a lot at the conventions. They've been showing what it looks like. And it's going to be out in the desert, because Dubai is in the desert. And there's a picture of me, I think picture number 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool because there was no line. I got to stand in this on this circular area and look at a screen, and they said, put your arms up to your sides, and I did, and all of a sudden I got armored up like Tony Stark, and then they snapped the picture of me, and then all of a sudden the helmet appeared on my face, and then I was able to play a game there where Ultron bots were coming towards me, and I just threw out my arms out like repulsor beams, and I was shooting robots. And it was pretty accurate too. If I misaimed it, I missed a robot. And I think that's gonna be a pretty cool ride. And I got to talk to the game designer who developed the game, because he was the guy on kind of controlling the line, and I was the only guy there. And it was pretty awesome to try it. And I posted a picture. I sent a picture to you guys. I think it was the fifth picture. I think I also, there were a lot of sponsors there, it was nice to see kind of that's the picture right there. It was great to see, they had major sponsors, Fanto was there, and a couple of other local kind of UAE sponsors were there as well. I also got a cool swag bag. The swag bag is in the pictures all at the end. That's if you got the VIP pass. And I got an Iron Man 3 CD. I got a bunch of local food. They had a random brownie in there.
Stay away from the brownie.
I got a Gundam like a nice like Gundam like action.
Oh, the kit, model yeah. Kit.
Yeah, and I mean the VIP pass was not cheap. The VIP pass for 3 days was probably about like $130, but my swag bag was probably worth over $50 to $60 at least minimum. Okay. You know, you know, it was just, you know, there's a lot of good young energy at the show, and I think that was the I think that was the important thing. There was also
the vibe that you got.
Yeah. Yeah, and I said the community over there seemed very behind it. And they, you know, they had a decent list of guests. If you were, you know,
Yeah, you know, they have this, you know, Nicolaj Coaster. That's the dude from
Jamie Lannister. Right? Yeah.
You know, Max Landis is there. Christopher Lloyd, Randy Orton. In terms of the artist, Kevin Eastman, Fabian Nicieza. You know, the writer was there. Wiles Portacio. You know, from
I tried to see him, but I only saw his like family members manning his booth, which reminds me of like San Diego Comic Con.
Sure. Yeah, I know his wife usually like sits there with him too. Yeah, no, DMC of Run DMC, Daryl McDaniels is there.
I saw a picture of him there.
Yeah. Nice.
And so, yeah, it was, you know, look, overall, like, I thought it was a great experience. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience to go there. It was something that if I was in town again, I would definitely swing by. And I do encourage people, if they decide to go to that part of the world, to swing by that show. And it's a great country. There's a lot to do. I did get to go to the desert, and I did ride a camel. Not to Egypt, but I did ride a camel. I did see the tower. The tower from the Fast and Furious movie is actually in the city next door, Abu Dhabi. I got to see that.
Nice.
But yeah, overall, this was a fun show to go to and a unique experience.
That's awesome. Hold on, let's get the applause in there. Thanks for sharing that experience, man. That was pretty, you know, that's pretty awesome that you can go to that part of the world and, in my mind, of all places, find a comic book convention.
I think one of the funny things about the show, though, is you'll notice the booths are, at a typical Comic-Con, they'll have, like, the typical convention signage, but the booths are not the square cubicle booths. The Comic-Con booths, usually they take those away, but if you look at the pictures, you'll see the white kind of typical convention hall cubicle booths there.
Oh, yeah.
Any other questions, guys?
You get anything signed?
No, I didn't get anything signed. I did take a selfie with my friend, my friend at Zetascope, who's I took a selfie with her and started tweeting at the Zetascope, and they were just cracking up. They didn't even know I was in Dubai, so...
So cool. when you were talking about the retro consoles, were they like refurbished actual consoles, or were they like retro duos, Retron 5s? Were they the newer remake type consoles?
It was a mix. A lot of them looked like the refurbished older consoles, but and not some of the kind of more Retron 5s. I didn't see as many of those, but it mainly was like refurbished games. A lot of games in like little plastic bags that you might see at other cons.
Were there a lot of people selling back issues and stuff like that?
No, not really. What I did see, though, was like two booths focused on original art and almost like a heritage, but it wasn't heritage. But there are two booths selling. I saw a really sweet kind of like Deadpool cover, kind of some old, I can't remember, it was kind of like old, kind of late 80s, early 90s Marvel art, a couple cool signatures. I saw like a Todd McFarlane piece, and they had a Spider-Man there. But no actual back issues. A lot of it was more focused on like T-shirts and statues and posters. And a lot of local artists were selling art prints. And there was no real artist alley. It was all kind of integrated together. Like you would see an artist, then you would see kind of like a vendor and then an artist. They were definitely pushing kind of the local artists as well and the local creators.
Nice. Well, that's a great focus for them. You know, so basically the artists were kind of sprinkled, because I saw from some of the pictures the art, like there was, I think, an artist like posted right next to a vendor booth, like right next to that Metropolis collectible, but I could be mistaken. But it seems like they were sprinkled around.
Yeah. And for Agent 70, there were definitely cosplayers.
Okay.
I think what was funny is so in the UAE, the women, you know, tend to wear, you know, they'll wear a head cover. And so they were in head covers, but also in kind of costumes. And I, unfortunately, I missed, I miss taking pictures of them, but you'll probably find them online. Sure. Like, there's a really sweet one of a young woman dressed up as kind of like a I can't remember which video game, but like a, you know, kind of like an action oriented video game character, but she was wearing her traditional headdress, and people loved it and were taking pictures of them.
That's really cool. It's great that, you know, that this that the comic book culture, you know, reaches across all cultures this way.
Yeah, and people look. Everyone's wearing. If they weren't in kind of costume, they were kind of wearing a fanboy T-shirt. There was a focus on like Marvel, DC, and Star Wars. There,
sure.
You know, not a lot of G.I. Joe and Transformers. I was looking.
Gotcha, gotcha. Awesome.
So we're about to transition over to the reviews. Did you read any of the books this week, Matt?
I read about 20 books this week. So
dang!
I think I'll be following.
That is a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah. Okay.
You and Dirt will be pulling the weight for this week.
Yeah, really.
I read a good number. I read 6, I think.
I think I read the 10 because I was on a. I had a bunch of long subway rides today, so I got some reading in. But that's a lot. 20. 1, 2, 3.
What was the big book for this week? Was it like Moon Knight?
That was this week.
Yeah, I don't know if that would be the biggest, but it's probably.
Can I see what to start with? What was Silver Surfer number 3 like an anniversary issue?
It was. Yeah.
It was actually pretty good.
Tell us about that, Agent 70.
Sure. So. This issue continues a story that's been building since All New, All Different Silver Surfer launched. And what we've had happen in the last issue was the reappearance of the original Miss Thing for the Silver Surfer, and that's Shala Baal from Zen Law. And the crux of the story is that Shala Baal is using some Zen Lavian or Zen Law technology to transform Earth into transform Earth into a replica, but in the style, in the mode of Zen Law, which is like super modern, no disease, no famine, no strife. And it takes the team of the Silver Surfer, Alicia Masters, and Dawn Greenwood to stop this from happening with a little bit of help from Aunt Petunia's favorite nephew, the blue-eyed Benjamin Jacob Grimm, otherwise known as the Thing. So, you know, without spoiling too much of what happens in this, it's a nice homage to what the Surfer has kind of become over the years, what his story path is, you know, like where his story has gone since his first appearance in the Fantastic Four. And like I said, I'm not going to spoil what happens at the end, but there is something that's kind of you know, it's a pretty serious development for the Surfer, because anyone who's been reading or at least familiar with the stories that the Silver Surfer has been a part of has always known that he's reminisced about Zen Law. He's always been respectful of where he came from, and obviously he sacrificed his life for that planet, so he has very fond memories of it. But something happens in the issue that that deals a serious blow to that, and I'll leave it at that.
I will say this to kind of add on to the point without spoiling anything. There was a slight Transformers the Movie vibe in that one last part.
I get that.
Yeah, and there's also
animated movie or Michael Bay.
Animated movie.
Animated. Yeah. No, Michael Bay. Why would we not be referencing Michael Bay?
Good to make the distinction between the two.
Yeah, no, yes. you're absolutely right. No. Speaking of that new Turtles trailer, just came. Anyway. And there's also that, because there's also a parallel, because there's like it also has to do with, in a slight way, all of the women that has touched the Surfer's life. Mm-hmm. You know, Shala Baal being one of them, John Greenwood now, and Alicia Masters, you know. So there was also that parallel in there. And then, like Agent 70 said, yeah, there's definitely a, and Avengers pop up. So
sure, that too. It's a nice, you know what, it was a nice, it's kind of cool that the Silver Surfer stories that Slott and the Allreds have put together. Yeah, it kind of got derailed because of Secret Wars. You know, like they kind of put them off to the side and shunted them off into that alternate, you know, like kind of pocket dimension to deal with Secret Wars, like really tangentially, right? But this was like a really cool, you know, story that really does celebrate the history of the Silver Surfer.
Yeah, and I guess up until a couple of issues ago, it really was in its own universe, because then that's when it came back to Earth and all this started popping off and actually tied into saying, hey, well, things are different.
You know? Right, right. I like this. It was a nice change of pace, and I like the direction that the relaunched series is going in. Like I said, it seems like, you know, Slott's story got derailed by Secret Wars, but now that, you know, he's kind of back telling, stories that develop Norrin Rad's character even more. Now that he's back to doing that, it really says something that, you know, after being off the Silver Surfer, I mean, I've been reading it and collecting it, but I haven't been very enthusiastic about it. It's kind of nice that I'm back to being enthusiastic about this book.
Yeah. Like, that was the parts of that last run. I just forgot that it was coming out.
Understood. So. Same here. All right. What else did you guys read?
Well, anyone read? Since we're on Ben Grimm, do you want to get to the other book he was in?
Guardians?
Yeah.
I read that. I didn't have a chance to put it on my list. I'm not familiar with what's going on with Guardians of the Galaxy right now. I know they're fighting the Badoon, and the best part of these books are Art Adams' covers for me.
I agree. Those covers are beautiful.
So tell us about the book, Roddy, because I sort of know what's going on. Like I said, they're fighting the Badoon, but I know there's more to it.
So the Guardians are split up. They're all fighting the Badoon. Last issue, Kitty and Peter were off doing their thing, and they were hashing things out about, you know, his place and things now, because he was all mopey and whatnot. And at the end of that, something happens with him. But cut to this this one issue. We have the Thing and Rocket Raccoon, I guess, on another planet or another part of the planet. I'm not sure. They're on another prison planet trying to liberate it, basically. The Rocket Raccoon just kind of goes in, does his thing, and then here comes Ben Grimm out of nowhere and just wrecks shop.
Yeah.
In pretty good fight. I kind of love the dynamic between him and Rocket and this one.
Right. It's a lot. What I was going to say, it struck me a lot like how a Rocket and Groot story would be if Groot could talk and act, you know, like as charismatic as Ben Grimm, you know?
Right. What's that?
I didn't think of that. That's a great observation by Agent 70.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, which we'll see. We'll see Groot next issue, I guess, because I guess they're just breaking out the Guardians in pairs and having them do some stuff. But in this one, I kind of like it because, like, you know, they're doing their thing, trying to liberate the planet. Ben meets up with this woman who he can't talk to, but this little kid's kind of translating for him, and he's kind of got the hots for her, and she's seemingly coming onto him, looks like. During the course of the whole book, and then like a few more fights with the Badoon, some pretty good fights actually.
Yeah, what I was gonna say is there's a couple of really well done fight scenes.
Yeah,
I think this has been my favorite issue of Guardians since the new run kicked off.
I'm thinking Ben is pretty much the one that's carrying this book.
Yeah, he is. Ben is having a great time writing the thing. That's I think, like Roddy said, is what's what's sort of carrying the book forward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad they made a point of saying in the recap page that the Guardians have been split up and are going on separate missions, because you can really tell from the first issue or the previous issue, it just looked like a Kitty and Peter Quill story, and that I actually thought the next issue was going to be like a continuation of what they had going on.
No, they touch on it at the end of the book, but that's about it.
I only got to about maybe 10 pages into it before the show, but I'm enjoying it. The Guardians book has been a lot better out of all new, all different Marvel than when it launched, and whatever it was, Marvel Now probably at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So great art by Valerio Schiti.
How do you pronounce that? Are you sure you pronounce that right?
We always have fun with this one.
Oh, man.
It's a skeety wall. Oh, no.
Yep.
All right. Did anyone read Mockingbird number 2?
I did.
Oh, this is awesome.
The book is great. I love this book.
This book is awesome.
Yeah.
This is the backward story, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you kind of get because I think even the last time we talked about this book, that when we talked about number one, there were some things that wasn't really making sense at the time that are starting to make sense in this one.
Right. What I was gonna remind you was that the writer, Chelsea Kane, I think, didn't she have like an addendum at the end of the book saying this is the approach that we're taking?
Right.
So I sort of had to remember.
Two and three, we're gonna make things make sense to things. So
I like the fun back page where you can like cut out costume from her.
So basically what happens in this issue, we have the explanation behind the story in issue number one, or at least the interlude, exactly the segment of issue number one that has our heroine, Bobby Morse, aka Mockingbird, in kind of a S&M-ish outfit. Exactly, Dominatrix outfit. And we find out it's related to a mission at the Hellfire Club in London. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so obviously there's some there's a couple of British jokes.
Really.
Expense of the British in this book, which I you know, kind of came out of left field for me. But I thought they were funny.
There's a kind of a dig at the Hellfire Club talking about nobody just cared about you since the 80s.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well played.
Yes. Kate Nemchik or Nemchik. There's actually, this isn't the only book out this week that has like kind of a 2-page, moving action sequence, you know, like it's a splash page, you know, 2-page, splash where, you know, there's a lot of, action moving left to right or even in circular motion.
Around. I had a pet peeve about that spread though.
Did you have trouble making out what, where to read from, like where to start from?
No, if you look at the page beforehand and you see this, there's a large crowd, and then they move next page, and it's a great page, it's really well laid out, but she knocks out 5 people, and then if you look at page before, there's like, why are there like 30 people in the room?
Yeah.
That threw me off a little bit, but I love the issue. It was a lot of fun, and I do have that you guys will make fun of me for saying this, but sometimes when I read this Mockingbird, Mockingbird and Lance Hunter, because spoiler bell, Lance Hunter shows up here. Oh. I also think I feel that they're the Black Canary and Jason Bard of the Marvel Universe. Or is that? Am I just stretching?
I don't know that couple. I don't know that couple. Black Canary. Hey, I know Black Canary.
I was totally reacting to that the way I would normally react.
All right, forget it. I'm just gonna.
That's right, write it. Somebody out there gets it.
My only fear with this is I don't remember everything that happened in the first issue, so I'm pretty sure I probably had to like flip through it to understand.
You kind of don't have to, really. This is self-contained. Yeah. Like I said, there's only one part of the first issue that even calls into this.
Right, exactly. It's like a one-page thing. So
yeah.
I think what the addendum at the end of the first issue said was, read the rest of the book and then go back to the first issue. So you don't necessarily even need to remember what happened in the first issue. Just read this and then circle back at the end.
Mm-hmm. Because basically certain things that happens in the first issue are, as it seems, is going to come up in the next couple of issues. So
right.
That's all.
Right. I enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun. There was a couple of, you know, tea jokes I got a real kick out of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it still kind of weirds me out because my association with Bobby has always been with Hawkeye, and the whole Lance, the whole Hunter thing is, you know, definitely due to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I get that, even though it's still just as fun as you would have seen in Hawkeye and Mockingbird being together.
Right.
But sometimes it still just kind of just weirds me out. It's like, they're not together anymore. Yeah.
I understand that. I definitely understand that.
Are you also waiting for Wonder Man to show up and Tigra and Moon Knight and the rest of the wackos?
No, that's a separate thing. That's a separate thing.
Nice.
Hey, I would love the wackos to get back together, but I know that's not going to happen. So.
Cool. I heard Forceworks is coming back.
No.
It might be the next franchise to make its way to TV.
Hell, they could do that, yeah.
All right. What'd you guys read? Come on.
Let me get a quick ad read in here.
All right.
For Busted Tees. This episode of the Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as BB-8 Light Thumbs Up, Android Evolution, Star Wars The Force Awakens, Rick and Morty, Rick and Morty as Legos, Bernie Larry 2016, Pretty Good, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Simojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, and clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
Nice. Very cool.
All right. Anyone read A-Force number 4?
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
So I thought with all the, I guess, solicits for the second story arc happening, I thought this issue was the beginning of the next story arc. And I was like, oh, wait, it's still lovely Jorge Molina art, which was nice. So this is the end of the bringing the team together story arc, where the A-Force team has to take on the antimatter.
Mm-hmm.
If they destroy and kill antimatter, it would also kill
Singularity.
And I like how Nico was going back and forth with Dr. Bell, Tempest Bell from the Captain Marvel book, member of the Alpha Flight crew. She's like explaining how they could take out Singularity and like neglecting to mention that it'll also kill, or killing antimatter will also kill Singularity. And Nico's like, yeah, that's kind of important information that mm-hmm. we might need to know. But they work together, and then we have the return of a hero who we thought died last issue and who's not on this great cover here on the screen right now if you're watching the video feed. And then we learn some more information of, I guess, this woman has changed a lot since the old Marvel Universe ended and the Earth Prime started.
Right.
Powers, 9 Live, perhaps. This character and Nico get a makeover at the end of the issue, but we have to wait till issue 5 to see what the new look will be.
Right, they tease it at the end, with the cover of the next issue.
Ah, okay.
But what I was going to add is I had actually stopped reading this with issue number 2. For whatever reason, I just didn't read it when it came out. And then issue 3 came out, and I was another issue behind. Today, with my extended travels on the New York City subway system, I was able to catch up on issues 2, 3, and 4, and it definitely read very coherently. It was a nice 4-part story that pulled this team together. Does draw on some of the aspects of the A-Force limited series from the Secret Wars limited series. So I actually, in reading this in basically one sitting, I like this as an opening arc to this A-Force story.
I agree with you. This read better if you read it all at once, because I've been reading it every month, and I was ready to drop the book, but I think after this issue, I'm going to stick around.
Because it wrapped it up very nicely, I thought.
I thought this last issue, the characterization was great. I thought the character interaction was good, and I was getting sick and tired of the villain, and I'm glad they, glad they resolved that.
Well, spoiler alert, you probably...
Hold on.
You might be sick of him, but I think if they've proven he's going to show up, or some
right.
part of it's going to show
exactly.
up.
Exactly. So. Let's not forget that villains don't ever go away in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, I like this. I was actually very pleasantly surprised at how well this read. Like I said, basically reading it in one sitting. So it was a nice, coherent story.
All
right. Did you guys read all the standoff tie-ins?
Not yes. all of them, no.
Just the all-new Avengers one.
I read the all-new, I read...
Illuminati and then with Agents of
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh,
I missed Illuminati. I read the S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah.
Well, I read the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. one, and it, since I don't read Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I just read it as part of the crossover. I was really let down by it, because mm-hmm. it basically, a third of the issue is telling you the same story that happened in New Avengers.
Correct.
The same dialogue, just drawn differently from...
Wait, so American Kaiju comes up?
No. No. Luckily not.
Quite, yeah.
I bought the wrong issue, to be honest, when I was reading it. I thought, wait, did I buy the same issue again from a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, because I started reading it, and I'm like, wait a minute, I remember all this. Like, did I read a preview and forget about it? And then I realized what it was doing, and then it continues on the story that I guess has been going on in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. book, which has nothing to do with the crossover. So then, I got done with it, and I just felt like, okay, well, this really does, this was not, like, for the crossover, anything of importance.
Yeah, it just shows you how it fits into the ongoing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. story, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Great.
Yeah. So, not a big deal on that one.
Yes.
I feel like the whole standoff crossover, as with most of these, is so far a letdown. Besides changing Steve back to a younger self, nothing has really happened.
I like the Illuminati one.
Yeah, I was about to say that might have some issues. Some
yeah, tell us about the I didn't read the Illuminati one, but tell us about it. Anyone who read it.
You want to, Mac?
No, go ahead. I can comment.
Okay. So in Illuminati, as of last issue, we see the gang going after Absorbent Man, who is in Pleasant Hill under, you know, he was there being kept.
Under control, yeah.
Right. Here we have them after they've gotten him away from that and him recounting the story of what he's been going through in a sense. And it's kind of, I don't want to say tragic, because that's a little too much, but it's basically him going, okay, this is what happened up until this point until you guys came and got me. And it recounts his, you know, everything he remembers as being under the control up until things start popping off, and then he things change. He remembers, then he gets upset because when things happened, he was actually in the middle of a
beginning of a relationship.
Yeah, he's falling in love.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, basically, and come to find out, and who he is already in a relationship with Titania, who was coming to get him in the first place. And that caused some issues at the end of this book. But he was already pissed off because they, you know, because all of this happened to him. But he was also upset because he found out that he was actually really happy as he was under control of this stuff. And he was mad that, one, S.H.I.E.L.D. took it away from him, and two, that he was starting another relationship outside of the one he was already in. And things are about to pop off on that end because apparently. You know, it was him and Whirlwind that escaped with the Hood and Titania, and then, you know, like I said, the conversation that he and the Hood was having was overheard by Titania, who got kind of upset about that. But at the end of the book, they're pretty much saying, we're going to kill her. We're just going to start going over there and grabbing everybody who was under control of, you know, who's not with Zemo and them, who they recognized was in another part of the place destroying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get everybody from that and then just go take care of the rest of it. So this was a really good book. It was actually kind of heartbreaking because it was like seeing Crusher Creole in a kind of a different light, because it was like, all right, you know, he had this whole new life that, you know, yeah, it was crazy.
It's fake.
That it was,
right.
Yeah, that was fake. And then it's kind of a trope, because it's that thing of like, hey, I've been given all these fake memories. I don't know what's real anymore. And I don't know how to handle this stuff. So he's dealing with that. But at the same time, he's clearly got some anger issues as to what happened to it. Rightfully so.
Mm-hmm. I really, really like this. Illuminati, the first issue I bought when I was on vacation, and it just didn't do anything for me. And I just didn't stick with it. I didn't read anymore. But because of the crossover, I went ahead and read it, not expecting much out of it, to be quite honest. And I really enjoyed this story a lot. And the idea that, you know, you have this prison that all these people are in and all these bad guys want to break out of. And for him, life was perfect. I mean, this is your perfect small town is what it's supposed to be, to keep everybody docile. And he gets that life, that quiet life where, you know, he's not a villain and he's not in danger and he's not getting into fights. And he's just being able to live a normal life. And he realizes how great that is.
Yeah, and the irony is,
have a perfect life.
Yeah, and the irony is, at the very first issue of Illuminati, that's what Titania wanted with him, and which kind of got brought up in this issue. So that kind of messed a couple of things up.
I think this issue is like the perfect example of how an ongoing series can interact with a crossover, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was highly involved in the series. The crossover didn't feel forced. And there's movement in the story of the ongoing series. And I think that's why we all enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I also just like the fact that they did something different. It wasn't, oh, we woke up, we're angry, now we're going to smash everything. It completely flipped it the opposite direction, where it's now we woke up and, you know, no, plug me back into the Matrix. Like, I want to go back.
Exactly.
What it sounded like to me, what you guys were describing.
Yeah, I thought you were feeling any kind of way about Crusher Creole.
Gave you the feels.
Yeah.
Involved, actually. Yeah.
I would recommend this even if, you know, you're not reading Illuminati, even if you're not reading Standoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just the idea of that that flip on the, you know, basic idea that you're broken out of prison and your freedom is actually the worst gift they could give you. You want to go back and enjoy it because that was actually better than the life you've chosen for yourself. That was a very interesting take on the story.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I agree with that, because really there's enough of this book, this issue, that kind of tells you enough about what's going on outside of, you know, the story they're wrapping around. So,
all right. So then there was All New, All Different Avengers,
mm-hmm.
which
read that one.
It basically continues the main, you can call it the main story.
Right.
Of them inside the town. And of course, I don't have it sitting right in front of me, so someone else do the recap.
Okay. So we basically continue from, I believe it's the Uncanny Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And Kobik is basically, I'll ring the spoiler bell. Kobik is basically stopped the Uncanny Avengers and the New Avengers in their tracks and is trying to integrate them into Pleasant Hill, but someone reacts very quickly. No spoilers there, but you can kind of guess. Someone reacts very quickly and grabs everyone away. They're all still affected by Kobik's reality-altering powers to the extent that a lot of them don't have their powers and or abilities and or equipment, and the villains who have kind of broken free of Kobik's grip and control have are running amok and basically cut the Avengers team, this United Avengers team, into pieces. And lo and behold, our man Wade Wilson, who is obviously getting a lot of push nowadays because he's the star of a movie, comes and does his Uncanny X-Force shtick with Kid Apocalypse, but instead of that, it's with Kobik. You know, and things go from there. Things are made right, and we end the book with kind of looping back to something that we saw in one of the other standoff issues.
Yeah, and we also got some answers to why we saw multiple Maria Hills running around.
Yes.
And there's something else as you were talking that popped in my brain that now I've forgotten. But I just, in general, I thought that this was a really good follow-up to what's been going on in the story. Continuing on from Uncanny Avengers, I really liked that one and the way that it showed everybody waking up and coming back together, and I really enjoyed this one, the way it followed up with that story and the way that, you know, like you were talking about Deadpool, I thought his scene was really great, and it plays off that character so well where, you know, no, anybody but him. Like, keep him away from that girl. He's going to ruin everything. But he actually, you know, ends up doing a decent job of getting through to her. So I thought as the, crossovers go, this was another really good one that helps with the crossover and helps the story and helps, explain what's going on with a lot of these characters and gives you some of the insights to stuff that we've had questions about as we've gone through the series.
And you got a nice little Deadpool moment between him and Kobik. Of course, have the crazy character be the one to relate to a young girl.
Like I said, it's the straight out of Remender's Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah.
I, you were reading my mind just now. I was thinking about the scene with Deadpool and Kid Apocalypse.
It's hard not to see the correlation.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't like
how... Well, standoff is almost over.
The end of the issue was like, you know, to be concluded in or continued in...
The Omega issue,
but then there's a Captain America Sam Wilson issue before that, just at the continued story there instead.
Well, one thing that they have said about the crossover is that they're trying to make it where you don't necessarily have to buy all the issues.
Right. There's an issue of New Avengers coming as well, New Avengers 10 and Captain America Sam Wilson number 8 before.
And maybe that's what they're saying, is that this part is going to be the part that concludes in,
right,
like the direct part is going to be the one.
Because there's still stuff going on with some of those villains that we haven't seen play out completely. So I'm hoping that some of that stuff will be addressed instead of just, you know, going to the Omega and just stuff blows up and people throw punches and the little girl says, no, don't do that, and blink, it's all over.
I mean, I'm willing to bet.
Some of that's probably going to be in an Illuminati, probably, on that part.
I was just going to say, I'm willing to bet of the two remaining regular series issues, the Captain America one's probably going to play a much bigger role in the standoff crossover than New Avengers number 10, because if I recall correctly, New Avengers number 10 is going to have that awful Godzilla thing going on in it, so...
Ugh.
Yeah. So I think Captain America Sam Wilson number 8 is going to be the more integral part of the standoff crossover, and then obviously we get to the Omega issue.
So just remind me, American Kaiju is basically Nuke and Lizard Man together.
Oh, jeez. I'm trying not to think too hard about it, because they brought in their version of Rick Ronin slash Voltron slash, everything...
It's like when Joker's daughter got that Joker bot. And I wanted to weep for the children.
I do have one pet peeve about this issue.
Yeah.
I've got one pet peeve. So, you know, when Kobik goes a little crazy, and there are scenes of, like, someone's getting stabbed through the chest, and isn't the Human Torch getting blown to bits from behind?
Yeah.
So, okay, I didn't just misread that, right?
No, everybody's dead and or dying. That's what I was saying. Okay. When I was doing my brief recap, I was basically saying they're all getting cut to pieces.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Well, hey, remember the Kovic Saga? So pretty much the same thing happened there, and everybody got you know, just magically all right. So
yeah, yep.
All right.
You know what? I just flipped to something. I'm sorry to interrupt the review section. I don't know. You guys have been reading these books recently. There's a Pop Secret ad in the middle of these books now, and I wanted to point out to you guys that the Captain America shield is miscolored. When you have a chance to look at it, you will look at it and be embarrassed.
I usually read digitally, so I don't see those ads.
Oh, isn't this the shield from Death Shield, the guy that showed up in Deadpool and the Mercs for Money?
Oh, God, I don't know.
That's his shield, right?
I don't know. But anyway, moving on. I was just flipping through it.
Hey, speaking of Cap Shield, Age of 70, you might want to look into this.
Is that the Think Geek one?
No, for those on the video, this is a Captain America Civil War lunch
tote. It's a lunch tote?
Just saying.
That'll be what goes into the office refrigerator with my lunch.
I'm saying.
Kind of lunch tote that you put on your back. Kind of lunch you toting around.
No, I don't. You put it on your arm. If you go
to the
subway.
Those are just for your arm.
Like a shield. I was like a backpack.
I mean, yeah. I don't know what I'm doing. Probably about as big as a pie plate, if that.
Yeah, that's probably right. Given the price of it, too, it's not going to be that big.
Yeah.
That's cool. Good looking out, Roddy. I'm going to have to take a look at that. That's funny. My lunch bag is getting kind of worn, too. So anyway, moving on.
See, Spider-Gwen number 7 I can do quickly. I had to make sure I went and read the Spider-Woman Alpha issue that came out last week first. So I read that. Right.
Yeah.
It was all right. Not a fan of the art from, I think it was Vanessa Del Rey from the Alpha issue, but Spider-Gwen number 7 had Ben Gale as the artist, who I enjoy his work. A lot more sort of lighthearted, fun, has a lot of emotion and character acting in his art. But the story is Jessica Drew, a.k.a. Spider-Woman, and Silk from the Prime Earth, or Earth Prime, have gone to... Well, actually, I'll take that back. Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew, and, yeah, Silk, Cindy Moon, have gone to Spider-Gwen's world to hang out. The interdimensional device that Spider-Gwen uses to bring them there gets stolen, and now they're trying to find their way back home. Which interestingly enough involves Jessica Drew going out to find the Earth 65's version of Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards.
Actually, she went to look for a couple of because she says right before that she went to look for others, but they were all not.
They're all podiatrists,
basically. Yeah. You know.
They weren't superheroes, and they weren't accessible.
Oops. And apparently, the Tony Stark of this world is just like this on 616.
Exactly. What I liked about Latour's writing with regards to the alternate this version of Reed Richards, I think one of his best lines was, "I'm looking for it." I'm a Reed Richards lady, tying into some of the Hickman stories. I'm a Reed Richards lady. I was meeting dimension hoppers before I could tie my shoes.
Right,
love it.
There was a really nice Next Wave reference.
Yes,
in this also.
And to go back to how Stark is portrayed on this Earth. Look no further than the Stark Bucks.
Yes.
Coffee shop. So, fun stuff here. And
yeah. What do you think of the crossover so far?
This issue was fun. The first issue was kind of just meh. It was alright.
I liked the first issue. And I like the direction that this book is going in. And that it's really, you know, using the Spider-Women characters, you know, and kind of playing them off each other. And it's... I really like this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very... It's surprisingly... very good. You know, to me, it's been surprisingly good. And to be honest, this is like a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me.
The only issue I have with this issue was that I could have sworn, I didn't read Spider-Verse, but I thought they all had those dimensional things.
I was about to say, without spoiling too much, a lot of them had them destroyed towards the end of Spider-Verse.
Okay, and I remember one did, yeah.
Right, and one of the only remaining ones was the one that they were using to move around in this crossover.
I figured Spider-Gwen had it since she's a member of the Web Warriors.
Well, right. We knew she had it because she's used it before in the book. So,
but now it's stolen.
Right, yeah. Right. But kind of tying into what Tim just said, and we could even jump into Web Warriors as our next review. But because Spider-Gwen is part of the Web Warriors, yeah, that's why she has it. And I think the Web Warriors group are the ones, or pretty much the only ones that still have those interdimensional bracelet things, because I don't think they're able to save or preserve as many as they, you know, very many as a result of the events of Spider-Verse.
Yeah. But I'm hoping I don't get the feeling of yet another crossover it feels like it's going on too long. I mean, granted, 2 months really isn't that long a time, but when it's like three issues a month of the story, sits parts, it's like, does it really need to be dragged on this long?
I had the little postcard thing for it. It didn't seem like it was going to be running that long.
No, it's only April and May, So we've got 2 books out of the way.
But that's still 7-8 issues, though.
It's 8 issues total, right. So Silk number 7 and Spider-Woman number 6. But what I like about this is that it's going to develop the Cindy Moon character. It's going to give Silk something of a boost, you know, and see how the character is going to and how the book is going to be moving forward, because obviously that is, and I think we mentioned this when we were reviewing Alpha, which is of the Spider-Women books, Silk is the one that's in need of the most support. Spider-Gwen and Spider-Woman are probably doing okay. But I like the fact that they're using these three characters and bouncing them off each other, and there's nary a mention of Peter Parker, nary an appearance of Miles Morales. You know, this is their story. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about it.
That is something to appreciate.
What a world we live in.
Yeah, right?
All right.
You want to do Web Warriors real quick? Because I like this book, too.
I'm Dirt, sure did you read Dirt.
I was not very happy with this issue.
Is it because it wasn't that kid-friendly because it was from a different perspective?
No, it was because it was, like, disjointed. It jumped around. There were a couple points where I actually started looking at the pages to figure if they were printed out of order because of the way that it just jumped into things and jumped out of things, that it just really felt like I don't know, like something was off on this one. Where maybe they were trying too hard to do a noir style, but... You know, at one point they're sitting there in their headquarters and they go, hey, is that web on fire? And then suddenly they're walking through a portal into a world going on a mission.
Yeah.
What happened there? Like, why was that on fire? What, like, nothing, you know, went to it.
Right, but see, all right, so let's back up, because what we should do is set up what the premise of this issue is. So, like Dirt was saying, it starts out from... When we say noir, we kind of know which character in the Web Warriors the story is sort of being told, you know, whose perspective it's being told from, right? And it's from that perspective that, you know, it's that perspective that informs how we read the rest of this book. You know, it's his captions that, you know, his thought captions that kind of move the story along. When that web of life, or the strand, or the universal web, when that strand is on fire, no one understands what that means. And that's what's cool. Like, they actually come back to, they circle back to that at the end of the story and talk about how they don't know what that means, and they don't know what that could mean and the possible ramifications of it. You know, we get a little bit of origin story of Spider-Man Noir. We have even a little bit of an origin story filling out more of the Spider-Man of India, Peter Prabhakar. You know, we have, you know, we get some fill in for him, you know, in terms of filling in his story. But I like this. I like this more, far more than Dirt did from the sound of it, mm-hmm. because it definitely did a lot to establish these other characters that we really have not read a lot about. You know, in terms of whittling down the cast, we do find out what happens to Spider-Man UK and Mayday Parker, right?
Yeah, right.
We do find that out. But in terms of the cast that's left, after the end of the first arc, we do have some development of, like I said, the Spider-Man of India and Spider-Man Noir, and I like this issue for that. This is another sleeper candidate for Click of the Week. I definitely understand why Dirt maybe felt that this was disjointed. I do understand that, because it felt like the Spider-Man Noir narrated scenes kind of came out of nowhere. I like that there's actually a development in his character that could lead us down a very dark path in this book.
It just didn't, to me, it just felt poorly executed.
I can understand
it's,
that.
I literally started grabbing pages and feeling through to where they came out on the other side of the book, and then looking to see if those pages were in the right spot in the story, because maybe the pages were layered out of order when they got stapled, and trying to figure out if this was in the wrong spot and that's why it just suddenly jumped somewhere else with no explanation, with no follow-up on the stuff that just happened. And then when I realized that that's not what was happening, I was really disappointed at just the way, you know, I don't know if they're trying to build interest, like, ooh, something weird happened and we didn't hear anything about it and we don't know what's going on with it and there was no follow-up and no discussion, so maybe they'll talk about it later. But for me, it was just like, okay, you just left this thread dangling for absolutely no reason.
Come on, we read Claremont's X-Men. But anyway...
Yeah, no, but it was never... It felt like, oh, go ahead,
Matt.
I was just saying, I wish this was like a double-sized issue, because I agree with Dirt on this. It was just, I was reading it, I felt like scenes were cut out, but it just, I do agree with you also that I appreciate the characters more, because I learned a lot about them. I just wish it was executed better, because every time I flipped the page, I thought I missed a scene.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because one of the things I was thinking of is when you were a kid and you'd record a movie off a TV, and there'd be scenes cut out, or they'd have to cut to a commercial, and it would always be in some awkward spot, like they're in the middle of a conversation and suddenly it cuts to commercial and then it comes back and it's in a different spot because they had to cut like 4 minutes out of the movie right there
to make it fit into the time allotted.
Right. Yeah, so that's how I felt reading this. It was just, you know, like there should be another page like right here to deal with this transition. Like even a panel, like they could just throw another panel on that page to transition it better, and it just came off very poorly to me.
All right.
So there you go.
Cool.
So who read Weird World?
I didn't get to it. I dropped this book off my physical pull list, so I didn't get to it.
I'm an issue behind and considering whether or not I want to keep reading it or not, but tell us about it.
Oh, I didn't read it. That was kind of my point.
Well, let's hear about Moon Knight from whoever did read it, since that was the number one.
I read that one.
Yep,
I actually enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, this was good.
Yeah.
So basically Moon Knight wakes up in a mental hospital and he's not sure if he actually experienced everything or if he's just crazy. The end. There you go.
Pretty much.
Yep.
But it's done very, very well.
It is. Well, there are two things that really made it work for me. One of it was it's so bizarre in certain parts that, like, he could be crazy or he could be on the verge of something awesome, which is one of those things that really, like, either way, the story could go either way, and I'd be happy either way. Like, if he's literally insane, that makes for a great story. And if he's on the verge of this invasion on a metaphysical level that nobody else can sense, then that's an awesome story, too.
Kind of so like no a matter how type
it,
of thing.
Yeah, no matter how it plays out, it's interesting. But the other thing that was so great was the artwork from Smallwood.
Yes.
He did a Dream Thief series.
He was also on the last run of the
Moon Knight. He also did the last volume of Moon Knight.
Well, he did like the last half, didn't he? Because he was someone else in the first half.
Right.
But I started looking at the faces and the expressions, and I go, well, that looks a lot like Dream Thief. And I looked up, sure enough, it's the same guy. And the artwork in this, the panel layout and the pages, the one thing that kind of took away a little bit is there's a lot of blank space, a lot of white space, but at the same time, it's...
Yeah, but you know what it is? You know what I was going to say? I thought that was definitely evocative of the character's costume.
Right, well, and the white-padded rooms and... But, I mean, just the way they did the panel layouts, the way, like, there's one page that's like an exclamation point with the way it's laid out, but it's a little more subtle than that, but it adds to the drama of what's going on that page. There's just some beautiful stuff going on with the way he works the gutters and the fringes of the page that I just thought looked really great in this book. So I only bought it because it was a number one and it was a Jeff Lemire, and so I figured I'd give it a shot based on that. But I really enjoyed this a lot. I'm definitely going to be sticking with this, at least for this arc.
What's that?
I might pick it up next week now.
Oh, you didn't pick it up this week. I was very impressed by the storytelling in this. As Dirt said, the art is probably the best-selling point. My favorite page in this involved two panels where Moon Knight is basically in the middle of a personal one-on-one therapy session, and the therapist in this mental hospital is trying to convince Mark Spector that he's imagining everything about Moon Knight, and she pulls out this binder with notebook paper drawings, and that totally like I flash back to like elementary school and junior high school and like the drawings that you would draw on ruled notebook paper.
It's
right?
Like a part of the page is math notes and the other is like a picture of Captain America breaking through a wall or something. Right?
Exactly. Listen, I was doing that through like senior year in high school. I'd be in like AP Bio and sketching something, and people still remember that. But there's a page here, and Matt, when you pick up this book, you'll see it and you'll laugh because it's so well done in terms of how it looks, and it's just completely reminiscent of every kid who tries to draw like when they're super bored in class, and it's right there.
I also noticed that the moments that he has the most mental clarity are the pages that have the most sane artwork. I guess you could say that they're the most plain panel layouts. And the funny thing is that his moments of clarity are not always when he's in the mental hospital. Sometimes the moments of clarity are happening while he's seeing all the crazy stuff going on around him, which again plays into that, is he crazy or is some of this stuff really happening? And I like the colors, real quick, the coloring too on this book, because the art style from Smallwood is a lot of thick black lines surrounding his characters and the objects in the backgrounds, the coloring is very flat for the most part. It's a lot like the early Hellboy books from the early 90s, the way that there's not a lot of shading, there's not a lot of extra depth that they're trying to throw in there with the coloring.
With the coloring, yeah.
They let the coloring just basically give you these pockets of color of what's going on, but they're letting the actual line work do a lot of that storytelling, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, that's a good observation. It kind of struck me like a lot of the... I know some of the panel is not... are not fans of Dylan's artwork, but the coloring from that very first Ennis Dylan Punisher arc kind of... that's what this reminded me of. It's like really flat. Mm. So I definitely see that, Dirt. Good observation.
I will say that if you are a fan of, if you know anything about Moon Knight's history, that gets touched upon again in this book, or at least you'll notice it.
What, Frenchie shows up?
I think he's the only one who didn't show up, let's say.
Yeah, that's probably right. That's probably right.
Well, there is a panel where he's having, like, flashbacks to all this other stuff happening. You can see the cab driver. You can see Mark Spector as the International Man of Mystery. You can see some of the different costumes and stuff.
Yeah, Mr. Knight from the first Ellis. Yeah.
Yeah. So good stuff.
Yeah, it was good.
Do we want to rapid review it?
Yeah, we could do rapid reviews.
Yeah.
See, Amazing Spider-Man number 10, another part of this, what looks to be the final, I guess, showdown with the Zodiac.
It's taken a long time, but I actually like this issue.
The art from Kevin Coley is pretty nice. Him and the colorist on it, who names escape me right now, but let's see, Spider-Man. Spider-Man learns the identity of
Zodiac.
Scorpio. And we see some more teases. The robot that Dr. Octopus is inside, Mind is inside, gets a lot more camera time here.
Sure. and kind of teases. Developments of like when Ark is going to basically come back.
Dead No More, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a strong tease of Dead No More.
There's something going on with a mysterious person assembling villains of Spider-Man's for some plot. Again, probably has to do with Dead No More.
Mm-hmm.
That was Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, it was the art really did sell this issue. I feel like this story has taken a long time to develop. This is issue 10, and we're still dealing with the Zodiac. You know, I feel like this could have been wrapped up a lot sooner, but I do like the art. I'm not so keen on how long this has taken. So,
all right. Did anyone read the DC Preview magazine?
I flipped through it, but no, nothing in depth.
Yeah,
same.
In fact, I only had one DC book this week.
Was it Batman Superman?
It was Batman Superman.
I skimmed it.
I liked it.
The triangle number, the Superman shield with the two, it's doing exactly what I thought it would be doing. These stories are definitely doing week-to-week episodic storytelling, so exactly where the issue last week left off, that's where this one is picking up and continuing the storyline. We have the new Batman, the return of Bruce Wayne, and the relationship of Clark and Bruce is exactly as they left it, where he picks up Batman. He's like, did you bring a car? And Batman's like, no. Superman goes, good. And he picks him up and starts flying. Flying's faster than driving. And Batman's like, you realize you're officially pissing me off. Like, he just hates the fact that...
he's being carried.
Yeah, that he's being carried and thrown around. We also get an appearance of Bat-Cow in this issue, so that makes it 5 stars. But we get the continuation. I guess it's not much of a spoiler now since they talked about it last issue. But Superman is dying. All
lame.
The that he's gone through. No, I like it because he's going to die so that the real Superman can take over.
lame.
You realize he's not going to die, right?
No, he's dead. He's gone.
No, he's just going to be transformed into the Asian guy.
No.
Lame.
What's going to
happen? That would be lame. I mean, anybody who turns Asian is like...
Oh, this is just so lame.
You can tell he's going to lose. He's going to actually just lose his powers, and it's going to go to Lois Lane and the guy and the Kenji Kong.
I like the fact, though, that it makes sense with everything that he's been through, with losing his powers, with the kryptonite poisoning, with you know, everything that they've done to him in the last year, that it actually makes sense that it's, you know, it's more than he can handle. It's not, he's not supposed to go through all that. So I enjoyed that much of it. And we also got the push of what the storyline is that he's trying to hunt down Supergirl,
right?
Because she has disappeared. And this actually goes to a conversation that I had in our store with a customer a couple weeks ago, talking about DC having this problem where they'll introduce a book like Hawk and Dove, and they're like, these are key characters for the DC universe. These are people that, you know, you want to read this title, and then it goes 12 issues, it gets canceled, and you never see or hear from them again. And, you know, that was kind of the thing with Supergirl. She had a good run. It was a good storyline. They did the whole Red Lantern thing. That was actually a lot of fun. And then her book disappeared off the stands, and you just never saw the character again. She just disappeared. And so Superman is finally sitting there looking around going, I have not seen her in quite a long time. I'd like to know what the heck happened to her, and can't find her. So, of course, Batman being the world's greatest detective, he brings him in to try to figure out what's going on, because he wants to make sure that she's safe before he dies and rides off into the sunset. So all of these elements make sense. Everything ties together well. I enjoy when the Superman books do this. Like I said, I was a big fan of this in the early 90s when they were doing it, where it's all one ongoing story from week to week to week. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they have so many Superman-related books right now makes it easy to do that, although we learned this week that some of them are going to be disappearing here rather quickly. But I enjoyed the story. I like it. This is the type of superhero stuff that I really dig. So I was happy to see the stuff going on in this story, and I'm looking forward to reading what happens next week as the story plays out.
He's
going to
lose his power and just become Clark Kent. So that's how there's a Superman and a Clark Kent in the DC Rebirth.
Oh, sweet. Oh, God. Okay.
I'm fine with that.
All right.
Wait, now, does Guardian show up, and is Dan Jurgens and Jerry Ordwell writing everything now?
Actually, Superman? Dan Jurgens is doing the Lois and Clark Superman series. He's tied into the movie.
And he is writing, was it Action Comics?
Well, yeah, when they take over. Yeah. Hey, okay. And it's still better than Avatar.
Wow.
Okay. And I don't know how to react to that.
Does he become American Kaiju also?
Oh, God.
Now you're off the show. Just drop them. Dump them.
I gave the Harley Quinn and her gang of Harleys number one a read. First issue, I guess in Harley's series, she's rounded up some a crew just like Deadpool has in his book. Don't ask me who did it first. Doesn't really matter. She stages herself getting kidnapped so she can sort of like test her recruits to see how well they, you know, hold up and can I guess, solve a crime or solve a puzzle. Except they realize that they're being set up, and they're like, hey, we don't appreciate that, Harley. And then Harley actually does get kidnapped by somebody, so then they really have to try to save her now. The one thing I noticed from the art, the art and the writing is very wordy. There's a whole ton of, a lot of the word balloons took up a lot of panels, space in the panels, especially in the first half of the book. Second half, it wasn't so bad, but definitely early on, it's just like so much dialogue that it's like word balloons almost like everywhere, which got in the way of the story for me.
Too much reading. That's what I don't want in comics, is too much reading.
You gotta save space to appreciate the artwork.
Yeah, that's true. That's funny.
All right. Red Wolf number 5.
They're still publishing that?
Yes.
Yeah, really.
Goodness gracious.
Amazingly enough. And it's still good. We're finally coming full circle to what happened in the first issue, probably so they can wrap it up in 6 when the book gets canceled. My copy came with no sticker for a digital code, so I'm kind of pissed off. Send them an email. We'll see if I can get a code. But the story is, small town. Red Wolf is, he was the sheriff of Timely in the Old West. He gets thrown through this time warp. He's not exactly sure how. Just some guy appears in the past who appears to be traveling through time from the future to the past and sends him from the past to the future. And in the future, this town is being taken over by these cartel members, and they've got their assassins, and they're paying off the mayor, and they kill the current sheriff, or at least shoot him, put him in the hospital. And so you've got all this type of stuff going on in the book. And the fun thing is, though, it's one of those books where the two villains, one guy, he uses snakes, kind of like a Bond villain. He's got these snakes, and he drops off the snakes so the snakes can kill people. And he's got his buddy who, drives him around and runs his RV. And they just have that dialogue going back and forth. If you remember in the James Bond movies, there were like 3 or 4 of them had these two henchmen talking back and forth the whole time. That's what these guys come off as, even though it's a completely different type of world. But it's just a fun book. It's a, man out of time, man out of place storyline. It's nothing spectacular as far as that goes, but it's just played for a lot of fun. It does a lot of jokes about the terms and phrases that we use today that make absolutely no sense to someone from the past trying to figure this stuff out. And I just really enjoy it. It's never going to be like click of the week type of stuff, but it's just a fun, good book with some good storytelling going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's Nathan Edmondson for you, It's just a shame that, unfortunately, it's just not, it hasn't caught my, it hasn't retained my attention beyond the first issue, so.
I think it's one of those where when he was doing Black Widow or Punisher or even Deathlok, there was a lot more background to play with. There was a lot more of, this is your expectation of what it's going to be, and so now he's going to take it this other direction and do something awesome. Mm-hmm. And then they give him a character like this where, 99 out of 100 people are just going, what?
Why? Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if this was, him saying, hey, let me try this other character that nobody cares about, or if that was Marvel saying, hey, we need to publish something with this guy before we lose the copyright, or what the deal was. But, like I said, it's never going to be click of the week, but at least it's good, fun storytelling that's at least enjoyable.
I wish they would have started it later and not been part of all new, all different Marvel, because I probably would have given it like a real chance if it wasn't around this time.
There were 9,000 other titles being launched.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I guess they figured they had to jump on it since Secret War was a thing.
Right, and the Secret War series wasn't, the whatchamacallit, the
1872.
Yeah, exactly. What was fairly
good. Yeah,
yeah, it was fairly enjoyable, from my perspective. So, I guess they were trying to strike while the iron was hot, but it really hasn't caught on with me. So. Real quick, has anyone read Star Wars stuff?
Yeah, I was about to say, I got Darth Vader, so.
I read both.
All right, well, here, we'll jump to Vader. Do Vader.
There's not really much to say about it. It's pretty much ending Vader's time on the planet. They're quelling the uprising that was happening against the Queen and the Empire coming in. A couple of people got dealt with. Mm-hmm. 000 had a really good speech at the beginning of the issue that I love.
Yeah,
which kind of makes it a potential click of the week for me. Mm-hmm. But and it kind of plays into how the uprising gets quelled, I guess. Outside of that, there's really not much to say. There is the S, couple of the S people, whatever. I hate that part of the storyline anyway.
Yes.
that Vader starts the fight, but then something happens and one becomes not an issue, and then that part, you know, reaches an end in a very Vader style. So
the ending was really good.
I was going to say the ending.
That's about it. Yeah.
Exactly. The ending basically wraps up this. This kind of jaunt off to this ore, this mining planet, and now we're back on the with Dr. Aphra. My favorite part of this is always the Sala Roca's art. Mm. Just flip through it, just looking at it.
All right,
I was about to say, did you guys try to read this?
I got kind of spoiled on it at one point, but I probably will go back and read it.
I picked this up very late in the day, so I didn't want to give it. I didn't have the energy to kind of devote to reading it. So I'm proud to read it fresh tomorrow, but it seemed very dense to me up front.
No, I thought it was it was potential cook of the week for me.
Nice.
The quick synopsis is C-3PO is on a crash lands, and the only survivors are a collection of droids, including a prisoner who is also a droid who has vital information. But it's kind of a first order protocol droid, and they need to get to a beacon to contact contact Poe Dameron. And it's an assortment of like droids. There's a construction droid. There's a military droid. And a medical droid, and as they cross the beacon, they all help each other, but, you kind of lose people along the way, and there's a great discussion between C-3PO, who's kind of Rebel Alliance, a protocol droid, and this First Order droid, and they have conversations about the nature of being a droid and serving humanity, and you find out why he has a red arm at the end.
And one of the things that's interesting about it is this conversation that they're having is brought up the fact that because they're droids, they can have their memories wiped and they can be programmed to like whatever side they want and do whatever they want. So, the fact that C-3PO sees himself as morally superior because he's on the side of the rebels and the good guys, this guy's like, well, you're a droid. I mean, they could wipe your memory. As far as you were, one of the biggest villains before this. We could have been allies at some point in the past, and they wipe your memory, and now you're a good guy, and we're enemies, and you have no control over that. You have no choice over which side that you're fighting for, basically, which is a very interesting conversation to have between these different characters.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I think part of the reason why this was all could be a click of the week for me, it's written by James Robinson, who's one of my favorite writers, and it's drawn by Tony Harris. And for all of you old school fans to remember, this is the team that created that relaunched Starman.
Starman, which
is one of my favorite runs. So the fact that they got Tony Harris to do a full book was great.
Cool.
And I don't think there was any, as far as I've heard, there's no callback to the Droids TV series from the 80s.
Oh, no!
But no. There was a reference to Battle for Endor. I'm kidding, there wasn't.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm going to try to read it again, but I guess I caught it like at the end of the day, and I was kind of trying to prep for the show. So
it was weird, though. I did find myself at several times like having to remind myself, okay, what time period is this?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it is a character. I'm like, okay, wait, this is New Hope.
Really new.
This was after. This is before the new movie. Like, right.
Yeah.
Have to keep thinking about that.
Yeah, this is after Jedi before Force Awakens.
Because all the books are spread out in so many different areas now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, agreed. All right. Any other rapid fire? I got one left. I just wanted to touch on Spidey number 4. Mm. This is that like in continuity, sort of out of continuity. Peter Parker as a high school kid in sort of modern times. The art by is written by Robbie Thompson. The art by Andre Lima Arroyo is it's not for everybody, but there's a couple of pages in here very similar to that Mockingbird two-page spread that I was referencing earlier in the show. There's a couple of really great two-page action layouts in this. It's funny. I was referencing Fast and Furious 7 with the characters. With Dom and Brian driving the Lycan Hypersport through the buildings. There's actually a very detailed graphic of Spider-Man being punched through a building. Anyone who wants to take a look at that will have a good time. Kind of dissecting how that page is laid out and drawn.
Well, this is the artist that was doing Ultimate FF for that 6-issue run right before it got canceled when they brought in the whole multiple universe. Spider-Ham appeared in the Ultimate Universe, you know, leading into some of the stuff for Secret Wars. And it's not the greatest artwork. Like, that is, there are a lot of times certain characters are not in the correct scale with each other, or details on certain backgrounds are just kind of forgotten about. And so it's, you know, it's, that's not the greatest. But I thought the story, as far as the story goes, was actually a lot of fun. The way it talks about Doom, some of the stuff going on with Doom and the soliloquy that he gives about being alone, and, you know, because he's so superior to everybody else, there's no one else good enough to talk to, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. That was some fun stuff going on. I thought the story was definitely much better than the artwork.
Well, overall, but there is that great two-page getting punched through a building scene that I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, well, anytime you can get a scene with a guy sitting on a toilet, right?
No, you know, there's a couple of really cool, you know, just it translated very well. So I appreciated that layout.
You know, Agent 70, that's his bathroom right now. He's sitting on the toilet doing this, right?
Oh yeah.
He keeps all his computers in the bathroom because he's working on his best thinking, you know.
That's right. Don't we all do our best thinking in the bathroom? Seriously, now.
All right.
I like the cover, though.
Yeah, it's a good throwback, classic style cover. That is a lot of fun.
I think they color it that way, too. I just wanted to point that out. I think whoever colored the cover made a point of making that kind of flat. You know, maybe using like the basic coloring to evoke that kind of color palette.
Yeah. Well, that's your company vibe. But anyway.
Yes.
All right. I've got a few books here real quick. These are from Overground Comics, which is a newer company, a small publisher that I've really gotten into these books recently. Their superhero books are all set in the same universe. They have said that all of their books are going to be limited series. 4, 5, 6 issues, and then they end, but the characters will carry over from one series to a different series, so as people quit teams or characters die or, you know, whatever, things get shuffled around and these different series move around. Absent Captain was the first one that they launched, and it opens with the death of one of the superheroes, the leader of a team. Of course, on the night that the superhero character, you know, disappears and leaves a message for his friend saying that he's dead is the same night that a tycoon who owns this massive company that makes superheroes is murdered in his building. So it doesn't take long for the team to figure out who his actual identity was. He was this guy who's murdered. And so this book is built around this murder mystery of trying to figure out who killed the leader of their team, and all the crazy stuff going on with this giant company, this company that gives people their superpowers and builds these teams. And so it's been a fun, you know, murder mystery type of thing going on. The artwork on this one's actually been pretty good. It's a different artist in the first issue, but 2, 3, and 4 are all done by Joshua Flower, and it's actually really good artwork. The story is one of those where there are so many things that go on behind the scenes with the relationships with the different characters on the team, and some know each other's secret identities and some don't, and some trust each other, and you find out that one character is actually the brother of another character. Nobody else you know, knew about that, and different stuff like that going on. So it's been fun to see how that plays itself out in the series. Like I said, it's really well done with the way that they've played up the mystery and have worked everything out, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens in the future. In this one, a new character is brought forward by the company to be the new leader, and the company announces that the long-lost sister of the guy who died has suddenly returned to take over the company, and so there's definitely some sketchy stuff going on here that the rest of the team is trying to figure out what's going on. So that's a good time. We have The Graduate. This is issue number 4. The artwork on this book is really weird. It is crazy whacked out. If you look at this cover, if you look at the artwork closely, you can see it's kind of done in a fisheye lens. You can see the lines on the ground warping and the stuff off to the right-hand side kind of like melting off the side of the page there. The artwork through the whole book is done in a crazy style like that. Everything is... these weird camera lenses and these crazy angles. The artwork itself is very sketchy and loose. It's very digital in the way that it's drawn. But the story is about this girl who she's invulnerable. She can't be hurt. And so, of course, this plays with her emotions because she finds it hard to relate to other people. And also, she's one of the few people in this world born with powers as opposed to being given to him by one of these big companies to be on a superhero team. So this story is her basically figuring out that she wants to give being a superhero a shot, whereas her whole life she's kind of turned her nose at those people because of the way that they lust for the power and they fight for control and everything like that. So the story's fun, even though the artwork is pretty crazy on that one. And the artwork can be a little off-putting, especially if you don't, know that you're getting into something weird and crazy and out there when you're first starting to get into it. Hero Corp Knights, this is the other giant company that gives people superpowers and the teams that they put together. And this team, basically their company is trying to decide whether or not they're going to take over their rival company. So you've got that corporate espionage type stuff going on. At the same time, the team has to pick out a new team member to replace someone on the team who has decided to quit and retire. And you're dealing with the new person on the team with a different set of powers, not exactly sure how that they fit in with everyone else and dealing with those issues. All of these books really have a more personal level. For the storytelling, it's less about the dangers that they're fighting and the monsters and the robots and all that stuff that they're getting into, and it's more about the characters, how they interact with each other, how they deal with their powers, how they deal with fame, and dealing with people trying to watch them 24/7 and wanting to know their every move and all that kind of stuff. The last one came out this week. All these books came out in 1 week from this company. It's Plus Ultra, and she's a character who deals a lot with her self-image, and she's very, obsessed is the term that comes to mind, but it's really because of how the world treats her, because she's pretty and she's powerful, so there's a different expectation given to her. A lot of times she wants to prove that she can be the hero, and they just want someone pretty there to pose for pictures after the fight's over and doing all that kind of stuff. The artwork in this book is incredible. Matthew Weldon, I don't know if he's done anything else, but he's definitely somebody who's probably going to be appearing on a much bigger stage in the future. He's just great with the artwork that he can put out. But, again, the storyline is much more personal about her. She was supposed to be on one of these corporate teams, and she decided to quit and bail on her contract to be one of those teams because she's decided that she actually does want to be a hero and do things for real and not just be a mouthpiece for one of those groups. So then once you're on your own and you don't have the stylist and you don't have the corporate costume makers and you don't have all those people helping you out, how do you be a hero on your own and deal with some of these other people? And one of the best things about it is a lot of times she's not very good at it. She faces villains that have the much better one-liners, and they're more powerful, and they can think better on their feet than she can, and so she keeps losing. But she has that attitude of, I'm figuring it out, I'm going to see it through, and I'm going to follow everything to the end. So, again, all of these books are in the same world, so like Absent Captain and Hero Corp Knights, as things happen with their corporate masters and there's all that stuff going on in the background, something that happens in one book can have an effect on something that's happening in the other book and the way the characters act and are treated with some of that stuff. So I've just really enjoyed reading these books, seeing how they can affect each other, how some of these characters overlap in their different appearances. I think they've just done a really good job of world building with these books. I'm really impressed with how well they've been able to put all this stuff together, and I'm really, really digging the stuff that they're putting out, and I'm looking forward to, especially the fact that I like a lot of these books, and I know that they're going to end in one or two issues because that's the nature of how they're doing their storytelling and their publishing, and I really want to look forward to how they reconfigure things and jumble things and which characters get more attention in the future and, the way all of these things work together. Just a really good job.
It reminds me. How did you discover that?
We ordered them for the store for no reason. That's how I discovered them. It's one of those things where our store has a tendency to buy, if nobody, orders these random books, we order two copies for the shelf just to have them. Mm-hmm. And we list everything online, so, you know, we may sell them online to people all over the world who, you know, not necessarily people walking through our door, but we get a lot of this weird stuff that just comes through, and so I flipped through a lot of it, and I think it was about the time, Plus Ultra was the third one, I think, that came out, and about that time I began to realize that all these books were, you know, tied together somehow, that they weren't just random superhero books. One of the things it reminds me of is early Valiant. If you remember when Valiant first launched, and a lot of those books, you know, you found out that they tied together, they were all part of that same world, and, you know, Solar would appear and blow something up, and then you'd have, you know, someone in another book watching the fallout on TV, you know, that kind of stuff going on. It kind of struck me that all these books were related, and there's a letter on the back of the early books saying that, you know, these characters are going to get older, and some of them are going to die, and some of them are going to, you know, turn evil, and that's just the nature of humanity and the storytelling, and you're never going to see someone come back from the dead, and, you know, you're not going to have somebody who's 70 years old but still looks like they're 25, you know. They're not going to do that type of stuff. They're going to create a real world with real people and real characters, and a lot of their storytelling really is, like I said, it's more about the characters interacting and how they deal with the situations, and less about the actual fights that they're in and the you know, the battles between them and the villains.
Cool.
So they're all good. They're all good stuff.
Clicks of the week.
Oh, can I talk about two books that you don't want to pick up this week?
Oh, that you don't want to?
Do it.
I don't know. All New X-Men number 8, I it was still on my pull list. It's Beast and Doctor Strange teaming up. Yeah, it's like a bad issue of Brave and Bold. And then Rocket Raccoon and Groot, I've really enjoyed the first three issues. You probably can pass on issue 4. It's Rocket Raccoon versus Tony Stark in fantasy football. Probably a pass. I'm done.
Now, see, I have this because my son likes to read this, but I haven't read this particular issue yet.
Well, it's also Tony Stark and Rocket Raccoon playing Dungeons & Dragons together, which was fun, but most of the issue is them playing fantasy football.
I don't know. I might enjoy that. All right. So Beast and Doctor Strange, I'm assuming at no point in this issue was a reference made to Awesome Facial Hair Bros or Awesome Hair Bros or Awesome Big Hand Bros or anything?
No, it was just like, I can't, like, you would think it would have been a fun combination. It just kind of just fell flat. There's supposed to be some moral at the end. It fell flat. I don't know. I'm probably going to be dropping All New X-Men soon.
Ah, it's on my chopping block. I don't know why it's still on my list.
Was this a standalone one, I take it? This wasn't like a part of what any arc that's going
no,
on?
No, but it does continue the storylines, and they do. The one redeeming feature was Beast admits they got the crap beat out of them by the Blob and the Toad, the Benchwarmers, or the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. That was the only redeeming part of this issue.
Goodness. Goodness. All right. Clicks of the week, huh?
Clicks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hmm. For all the books that came out this week, I'm having a tough time.
I want to pick Moon Knight. I did enjoy it a lot. It was really, you know, well done, a lot of fun. But Illuminati just really stuck with me, yeah, with the story that they told.
Nice.
And I, you know, for a book that I don't really care about, this particular issue is one of those that has stuck in my mind for the last couple days. So even though it's not a series that I've enjoyed, and it's not a series that I plan on sticking with because of the strength of this, I probably will check out the next issue just to see what the fallout is. That's how good this particular issue is. So I think my click of the week has to be Illuminati number 6.
Nice. Ooh. Nice, nice, nice. I'm kind of torn. I've got my choices are basically Old New, Old Different Avengers, Spider-Gwen, and issue number 4 of A-Force, surprisingly, because of how well it tied things together. I think my first and gut reaction is going to be Spider-Gwen number 7. I'm going to go with that. That's my click of the week this week. I like the continuing interactions between the Spider-Women of the Marvel Universe.
I'm going to go with a mini crossover taking place between a family of books telling the final days of Superman. That's Batman Superman number 31.
Whoa.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah, nothing really jumped out at me this week, but I do remember enjoying this story that Peter Tomasi's telling with Superman. He's actually got me caring about, again, just like Greg Pak did in Action Comics, has me caring about Superman. And Doug Mankey's art was pretty nice in this as well. Usually I'm not, his art is kind of hit and miss for me. A lot of the times his characters look like statues, especially in the face, like their faces are like they're frozen in time. But he stepped it up here in this issue. So Batman, Superman, number 31.
Okay. So I'm slightly torn because in Illuminati was a very good book this week, but there was also Mockingbird number 2,
yeah,
which was also a quite fun read. So I think I'm going to go with that because like I said, the Illuminati definitely would be it if Mockingbird wasn't out.
Nice.
I'm on record as being, I have been loving that book. So.
What about you, Matt?
I'm torn between Illuminati and C-3PO, and I've been thinking about it, and because I'm such a huge Starman fan, and I still have my full run, I'm going to C-3PO.
Nice.
All right, we got quite the lineup then.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it's a spreadsheet down here. You would say, oh, what's
yeah.
Add Matt's for me, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I got it.
Jump back up to the news. We got a couple of news segment, or news stories.
You need an ad read right now, or?
Do the last one for tonight is for My Comic Shop. Jay's podcast, also sponsored by My Comic Shop. Go to cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on the My Comic Shop banner and order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, finished classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your door. Why bother slipping to the local comic book store where you can order your books online? My Comic Shop through cspn.us. Do it today. I like he was music. About to fight.
Yeah.
Well, you were getting into cinematic news. It made some sense.
That's funny.
It does. Marvel's Cloak and Dagger, again, a live action TV series on Freeform, which we're able to demo.
It's going to Freeform?
Hey, I didn't even know what Freeform was until this actually informed me that this is the former ABC Family.
Yeah, it was ABC Family, and then they realized they had a bunch of shows that were crap and not family oriented. So they had to change the name of the network.
That's just like, Nickelodeon has some, don't they have a TV network called Splat?
They will, but that's all the old 90s, so it hadn't come out yet, though.
Okay. I think I was changing channels maybe a week or two ago, and I guess the change had gone into effect, and I had no idea what the heck Freeform was.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what channel is this? So this was my, and I didn't care enough to Google it, so this was my, this was what informed me of the change.
Well, at New York Comic Con, when they announced the change, they were giving away little packets of like slime, a little like containers of slime. They had Freeform on them, and I was just like, really?
Oh, interesting.
Huh, but stupid.
That's pretty random.
Yeah, really. I would say slime would be Nickelodeon.
Yeah, exactly.
I was gonna say that would be the splat. Yeah, that's where I thought you were going with that. But
all right.
Spider-Man will get help from other Marvel superheroes in his standalone film, which we got the title of what that will be, Spider-Man Homecoming.
I'm coming home. Yeah, Homecoming.
Does this mean he's getting back to Marvel proper? We don't know. No, let it go.
The font for that, I wasn't a fan of. It looked a little cheesy.
It looked like a cartoon.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of the Sensational Spider-Man graphic. Which I did enjoy that cartoon, but it just didn't look right for like a live-action movie logo.
Mm-hmm.
We got some Captain America Civil War clips at the MTV Movie Awards, and then
Civil War clips are on embargo for me. Yeah. I have stopped watching.
I've muted all the keywords on Twitter, but yet I still watch some of the videos today, so go figure.
Wait, did you guys get the free magazine?
Yes.
Yeah,
I didn't get it. No.
Well, you have a bad comic shop.
Oh. No, I just didn't pick it up.
I didn't go to the shop. So.
Ancient 70, see, there's a spoiler, Captain Geico.
Oh, no. That's funny.
Where's the shield?
I actually sprung for the paid cover because it has the Alex Ross, the 30th anniversary, the 75th anniversary poster.
Oh, wow.
Right, in color and in black and white on the back.
Oh, wow.
See, we didn't order that one. We ordered the John Byrne one that had the Cap for President pin.
Oh, okay.
As the
cover. Did you get any of the Kirby ones?
No.
Uh-uh. Oh, okay.
See, we also got a Suicide Squad trailer at the MTV Movie Awards. And Batman standalone film starring and directed by Ben Affleck was confirmed.
Yep. Which sound effect? Come on, guys. I'm not sure how I feel about this.
Look, he was all right in that other movie, so it could work out.
He was one of the better parts of the movie.
Yeah. He was the second worst part after Luther.
Oh, no!
Luther was bad, I will admit that.
Yeah.
True, but I wouldn't have said that.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have said Affleck was like the worst part of that, or even in the bottom five, or top five.
Is it true they're casting Casey Affleck as Nightwing?
Mm.
Drop him. Him. No.
That's funny.
Let's see. Kevin Feige reveals that Ryan Coogler is co-writing Black Panther movie.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Iron Fist adds Lord of the Rings, David Wenham as Harold Meacham. I have no idea who that is, who either person is.
He's basically Danny's dad's rival. Well, he was a business partner, but ended up being rival.
Right. And you'll recognize
him. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you'll recognize him from Lord of the Rings. He's Faramir.
Mm.
Who's that?
Gosh. Wait a second.
Which elf was he? Yeah, elf.
No. He's one of the humans. It's Boromir's brother from Gondor. Oh yeah, we're totally diving in deep.
I'll just nod my head, yes. We got the first trailer for Marvel's Doctor Strange.
That was awesome.
Yeah. It was a little devices on in cases.
Yeah.
Because of the Ancient One specifically. But you know.
I like the Inception look to it.
Yeah.
Need to see some more, though. It was a teaser, so didn't see too much. Natalie Portman is out, and Tessa Thompson is in for Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, so, I think Natalie Portman is done mailing that particular performance in, so.
But she can't become female Thor now if she leaves.
They'll recast it.
There'll be another movie. You know.
Yeah, they'll recast it.
What's cool is supposedly Tessa Thompson playing a Marvel hero.
Wait, hold on.
They're rumored to be... Well, they're saying... I've seen a rumor that said Valkyrie, but there's something else that suggests otherwise.
Really?
People are hoping for Spectrum.
Right.
That would be kind of a funny place to introduce her, though, in the Thor movie of all places.
Yeah, basically.
Why not?
Yeah, right, as long as we get her, right?
I'm about to say, they made some interesting leaps before in the way they handled stuff, so it could happen.
True enough.
Sony is releasing the original soundtracks for G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Jim and the Holograms.
Awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
With Warner Brothers to launch a Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe with Scoob.
Wait.
So this is taking place. This was announced at CinemaCon, which a couple of the other movie announcements came from. So Scoob, with the initials SCOOB, is planned for 2018. It would be the first of several potentially interlocking Hanna-Barbera movies.
So when you get that wacky racist Fast and the Furious movie you've been hoping for, you have this to thank.
Did I go on a Twitter rant about that they should just turn Scooby-Doo into, like, the Fast and Furious movies?
You probably did. I don't remember that.
That sounds like something I would say. If they want interest. So Warner Bros. Can't get their animated.
I live my life a quarter mile at a time, Scooby.
See? It already works. Warner Brothers can't get their comic book universe going, so trying to animate it live action universe.
Hey, I'd be curious to see what a Johnny Quest, real talk though, I'd be curious to see what a Johnny Quest movie would be like.
Keep Zack Snyder away from all these movies.
Well, yeah, but
we might have some winners. Oh, the Smurfs are involved.
Yeah.
That's going to be a clusterfuck.
Hey, they're already out there, so. All right.
We actually got Tim to drop the F-bomb because.
I'm just thinking about it. Because look at this cast of franchises that would, I guess, all interlock. The Flintstones, Johnny Quest, Jetsons, Yogi Bear, Smurfs.
Or Herculoids. Come on, Herculoids.
Oh, yeah, really. No. Teen Forest. That's true. You know, the Shmoo, even. Well, maybe not.
Oh, no.
Space Ghost. Come on.
Yeah, there you go. It's going to be Laugh Olympics, and they're just going to break off in their own little corners after that.
That's like back when Cartoon Network was good.
Oh, no.
I think that's damn boring now, isn't it?
All right, moving on.
Batman the Killing Joke is officially rated R, so there you go.
Were we expecting, I don't know, anything different?
I don't know. Most people expected PG-13 just because of being from that line of movies.
When people are petitioning for a stupid R-rated Batman Superman movie, I don't know.
It's supposedly it might get put back in theaters.
So that, I don't think that's going to happen.
I'll go
they
again.
Just want to break the billion mark. That's what it is. They don't want to take it out of the theaters before it hits that. That's what, you know, I think that's the driving force.
But that seemed like a no confidence on the original cut.
Yeah.
If they did that.
Jackie Earle Haley joins The Tick in The Dark Tower.
Spoon!
Thank you. Glad somebody did that.
And Deadpool 2 is happening with Ryan Reynolds back as Wade Wilson.
Cool. Yeah. That's another one.
Cool.
And see, in comic book news, we got Lemire and Ormston's Black Hammer is coming in July to Dark Horse. It was a series that initially had been solicited probably like a year ago, but I think the artist got sick or had some health issues, so they delayed it.
Okay.
Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso weave a tale of moonshine, and this was at Image Expo.
You had me at moonshine.
The 100 Bullets team.
Only Press announces 5 new titles from open submission policy. So congrats to those creators.
Awesome.
The Rebirth Superwoman is Lois Lane, but which Lois?
I still am not sure how I'm going to deal with this Rebirth stuff. So
if Spider-Man can have, if you have a Spider-Woman crossover with 3 different Spider-Women characters, and even more with Scarlet Spider and Venom out there, you can have 5 different Supermen flying around Metropolis or super characters.
And they could throw the character in Supergirl next season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dynamite announced at Emerald City Comic Con the release of the Art of Atari, and the new all new Wasp will show up in all different Avengers, but also the new Comic Book Day issue.
Yep, this one right here.
Woo!
Oh. You got to see Thanos Cable.
Yes, Thanos Cable is in this.
I saw your tweet. Thanos Cable.
Let me see here. Let me find it.
Dirt's being spoiler. Spoiler.
Yeah. Thanos Cable? What the hell?
I don't know how well that shows up.
Oh, my Thanos. God!
No.
Thanos Cable. There you go.
Wow.
Are they doing Extinction Agenda number 2 now with him?
Well, there's no trading card bagged.
It's amazing how Thanos has been like the overarching villain in the Marvel Universe since he showed up, his face showed up at the end of Avengers 1, the movie. He's just like, he's been a constant.
Yeah, and they've been doing a good job of sort of keeping him lurking, you know. I guess what they're doing is waiting until they're ready to do him in the movies.
I guess.
All right. So, talk about Free Comic Book Day real quick.
Yeah.
DC has 2 books. One is just the Suicide Squad reprint. So anybody wants to get in on the New 52 series, you got a free issue there. The other book is the all-ages DC Girls. I forget what it's called. My daughter ran off with it. I was looking for it earlier. I can't find it. It's buried somewhere in a room already.
DC Superhero Girls.
Yeah, it's like if you go to that website, the DC, is it DCSuperheroGirls.com?
Yeah.
It's that style. I mean, it looks like, you know, that cartoony style, all those characters on that website. Yeah, I think the animated shorts, is that super high or superhero high or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anyway, it follows all of that stuff. So you get a good kids book and you get a reprint of something.
That sucks that they're not getting any more new content, though.
No. But the 2 Marvel books, you've got your Civil War 2, which has your Civil War 0 setting off. They talk about cosmic cubes. And you saw Thanos, so we'll leave it at that. And then you do get the story with Wasp, New Wasp, and it explains basically where she got her tech from and how she's getting wrapped up with the Avengers. So that storyline is the follow-up, the back part of that one. Okay. The other one from Marvel is the Steve Rogers Captain America.
Ooh.
And it looks like, because it's not out yet, it's hard to say exactly, but it looks like it's the first part of Steve Rogers Captain America 1.
Wow.
I can't tell if this is original, like issue 0 stuff, or if this is the stuff that's going to be part of 1.
Right.
But references are made that you can tell that this happened after Standoff, and so that the stuff in that storyline obviously, you know, ties into this. The backup story is a Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man storyline, which leads into the Dead No More. And just quick spoiler is basically he's noticing that a bunch of people who are supposed to be dead are suddenly reappearing. And so it's not just one character that's coming back. It's a ton of people, and we've seen that. A couple other standouts, though, is the there's another Tick. With you guys mentioned Tick just a minute ago, this is Tick discovering all the different multiple Earths versions of Tick. So if you ever wondered how Tick works in the multiverse, here you go.
Oh my goodness!
Badger makes an appearance in the mixtape 2016 from First Comics and Devil's Due. Okay. This looks like it's lifted from issue 4. Issue 3 came out this week, which sets up his fight with Vladimir Putin, but the actual throwdown is coming in 4, and the throwdown is what's reprinted in this book. So, so at least if anybody has not gotten on the bandwagon of how awesome Badger is, you'll at least get a taste of it in here that will entice you to go pick up the series, because, I mean, frankly, Vladimir Putin found a mammoth frozen in ice, and he's selling mammoth steaks from this animal in order to fund his Black Wizard network to help him take over the world. And so Badger has to fight him MMA style, one-on-one. So, like, this is the best story ever. you know, Dark Horse has got Serenity, Hellboy, Aliens. I think the Serenity might be new, but the Hellboy and Aliens are reprints.
Kind of the usual stuff.
Howard Lovecraft and the Frozen Kingdom. This is from Arcana. This has actually been a good all-ages series that's been going on, and they're going to be doing an animated feature coming soon. So this is like your introduction for the animated feature. That's going to be
is there any Mouse Guard?
Mouse Guard, yes, there is a Mouse Guard one. It's,
is it hardcover?
No.
Oh, okay. Because those are hard. Those are notoriously hard to come.
Yeah, they're not doing the hardcover this year. Mouse Guard is in the Boom Summer Blast, they're calling it. Okay. It does have a Labyrinth story. It's got an Adventure Time story. The new Goldie Vance series that just started is going to be in here, so there's that stuff to look forward to in that one. But the other big standout for Free Comic Book Day is ROM Zero, and it's actually a flip book that also has the new Action Man based off that old toy line. And I have to say, ROM, I know, Agent 70, you've been a little worried about how ROM is going to be treated this time around. This is dead on. I mean, it's definitely a reboot for the modern era, but he's fighting the Wraiths. He's got his neutralizer. He's you know, scanning to find the ones that are hidden among humanity. And, of course, he pulls out his neutralizer to blow them away. And, of course, all the humans see is this robot, you know, wiping people off the face of the earth. So, of course, they think he's the villain. So all of that classic stuff is there. Action Man, based off the old toy line that was a takeoff of G.I. Joe, this is your International Man of Mystery is the way they play it up with the original. If you can remember, the original G.I. Joe was basically a guy, but he could be a submarine guy, he could be a scuba guy, he could be an airplane pilot, he could be whatever. That's what Action Man is continuing on, except Action Man dies in this one, and his sidekick guy has to become the new Action Man. So so there's some fun stuff, actually.
For Ron?
Looks
good.
It's a square. David Messina does the inside, but that's not the cover. Zach Howard. Zach Howard is the guy who does the cover. So both of these books, actually, I only read Action Man just because it was on the back of ROM, but it was actually really enjoyable. It's a lot of fun. If you can imagine a more U.S. version of Austin Powers, so not Shagadelic 60s, but making fun of that whole, you know, man of mystery, a guy who can solve every problem type of thing.
Sure.
Plays into that. It's a lot of fun also. So those books are both fun and looking good.
All right.
So, quick rundown of some of the books for Free Comic Book Day.
So which ones do you think are going to go the quickest?
Well, we ordered extras of the DC Marvel ones just because everybody grabs those because they say DC Marvel. But looking forward, I think the Boom one's going to do pretty well because it has...
Lots of kids stuff in it.
Yeah, and it's original stuff. Mm-hmm. I think all of it's original. The Mouse Guard is original. The Adventure Time's original. The Labyrinth is, you know, those are always exclusive to Free Comic Book Day. For whatever reason, they won't ever put out a Labyrinth book, even though that would be great. I think ROM's going to do well just because everyone's going to go, oh, I had one of those. I remember those.
Yeah.
You know, and there's always the stuff that's like the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund always has a book out there, and it's okay. There's an Archie book that reprints the first of that new series, so people are going to grab that. I think, you know, ROM is one of those books that has the potential to take off. It's one of those. It's one of those books that's either going to do really well for not being a Marvel DC book, or they're going to be that group of hardcore people that love it and no one else reads it. Like, it's always that fine line. But I think that one has the potential to actually be, because it's an original introduction to the character here in this storyline, I think this one has the potential to be one of those books that people are going to be fighting over to put into their collection as part of that series.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking that the two Marvel ones and that one are probably going to be the ones that are going to be kind of hard to come by. Yeah. So. All right, cool. Thanks for that, Dirt.
Yep.
Much appreciated.
Cool. And we want to thank everyone for tuning in to tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles. We want to thank our guest, Matt Wang, for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Follow him on Twitter at MattWang97. You have anything else you want to plug?
No, I'll tweet it, but yes, definitely check out my game, Emergence Genesis. It's doing well in stores, and you know, everyone's loving it when they get a copy.
Good deal. Yep. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt, and go to his website, PopCultureNetwork.com. And Agent 70 is at Agent_70.
On Twitter and Instagram!
We'll be back next week with another exciting episode of Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace, fam! What's on your